Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
It's nearly dawn, or what passes for dawn here on Proxima III.
Yeah.
I wish we hadn't killed them. It's a bad sign, a bad start for our new life on a new world.
We had to. They attacked us.
Attacked us? 2 spears against 40 blasters? We should have met them with stunners on low charge, but McNess ordered us to blast, and blast we did.
Yeah.
The woman and the baby really stick in my craw.
All our nerves were on edge. I know I was afraid when we first stepped out of the ship. There was something terrifying about the unfamiliarity of air and space and sky. Something so... so...
alien?
Yes, alien. But you're right. Of course, we shouldn't have been ordered to blast. I wonder why they attacked us. Primitives usually run. We must have been an unbelievable sight to them, spiraling down out of the sky.
I don't know. And we can't ask them. They're dead. All 5 of them.
Yeah.
The wind's cold.
Well, you could always go back inside the ship.
I'm sick of the Elpis. We all are. 8 years of it, it's too much. We'll get used to the wind, I suppose. There's gonna be lots of wind, with so much water and only this one landmass on our new world. It's not like Earth.
I suppose the taboo is lifted now that we've landed. We can talk about Earth again, and wonder, and speculate. I wonder what they're doing now on Earth.
Starving. Freezing. Suffocating. Burrowing into the ground for fuel and warmth. The handful of people remaining must be living many hundreds of feet underground in sealed caverns.
Seas frozen, one giant ice sheet from pole to pole, the atmosphere gone.
We astronomers paid you finely, didn't we, Bernard? For all the appropriations you got us in committee meeting. You were always generous with us and the physicists. But when the catastrophe happened, the mystery, the debacle, we couldn't help. We didn't know the answer. We just didn't know.
None of us did. I remember it like it was yesterday. The day before, I just read through a report on my desk about some tribe of Indians high in the Andes. The report said that the parents had been persuaded to send their children to the school in the foothills. That even among the adults, illiteracy and ignorance were being eliminated. It was the last of the truly isolated tribes. As I finished reading it, I looked at the sign over my desk and read the motto. There is nothing unknowable. There are only things not yet known. And I thought, yes, we're getting near our goal. We've conquered ignorance and superstition and illiteracy. And as time goes on, we'll know more and more things. Knowledge is like an expanding circle of light that eats into the darkness. And then the darkness came. And we didn't know how it could have happened.
No. We understood what happened well enough. I was at the observatory that night. I remember thinking that it was almost time for me to go to the dormitory and catch some shut-eye. It was summer. Sirius and the sun would both be up soon. Sure enough, Sirius rose, blazing in the darkness, after him, Leo in the southeast. Only I shouldn't have been able to see either one. They should have been invisible in the sunlight, but the sun never came up. Because it just disappeared. The sun was gone.
And even a non-physicist like myself understood what that meant. Without the sun and its gravitational pull, the entire solar system fell apart. Planets all launched out into open space. The Earth became uninhabitable.
And so those of us who could left.
Yeah. I'm gonna have a look at those bodies.
What?
I said I'm gonna have a look at those bodies.
I heard you. I just mean why?
Because I'm an anthropologist. And those five aliens we murdered might be the only clues to what sort of civilization existed here.
That's morbid. Don't go.
I'll be back shortly.
Learn anything?
Yeah. I think I know why they attacked us.
Why?
Because I think we interrupted some magical or religious rite. They were at a very low level of material culture, at least from what I could see. The points on the spears were stone, and they were wearing garments of what looked like some sort of tree bark, not woven cloth. But the young men had rattles of some sort of shell around their ankles, and the old man was holding a little drum in his hands.
Rattles? A drum? Musical instruments?
Yeah.
What do you think that means?
What do I think that means? Well, they had good cranial capacity. And with humans, as soon as they can think at all, they start trying to impose their will on the universe through ceremonies, through music and dance and chants. So I think they met here by the shore to perform some sort of magic. The woman and the baby watched. The old man played his drum. The two young men sang and danced. Perhaps this bit of the coast was sacred to them. Perhaps when we set our ship down here, we profaned a sacred place.
We shouldn't have killed them.
You're right, we shouldn't have done it. But we did. And now we must forget about it. When it's light, we'll bury them.
I wonder if they were the only humanoid life on the planet. I mean, this island was the only landmass we found anywhere. If those five, when we blasted them, did we wipe out the planet's only intelligent native life?
Possibly.
Yeah.
If they hadn't attacked us, we could have helped them. They were primitive, superstitious, blankly ignorant, of course. But they had good cranial capacity. They could have learned. We'd have taught them as we did the primitives on Earth. We'd have led them gently away from their superstition and ignorance, as we did on Earth.
No. No.
No what?
No. No. It couldn't be. Could it?
What? What couldn't be?
You should be quiet for a moment. What you just said. I need to think.
Do you want me to get Dr. Ferguson?
No! Why would I want Dr. Ferguson?
Because you look like you're about to pass out.
Sorry, it's just that... that... I've come to understand. You made me understand. You said, as we did on Earth.
Huh?
I know what made the sun go out.
What? What made the sun go out?
On Earth, there was always somebody dancing.
What?
There was always somebody dancing.
Dancing?
Always in the high mountains. There was always somebody fasting or praying. Always before dawn, there was the sound of rattles and the stamping of footsteps. In the winter, flame leaped high on the rock through the swirls of snow as they made fire magic. They danced. They prayed. They chanted. And the sun came up.
What are you trying to say?
That people used to think, before we taught them better, that they had something to do with the sun's rising. But then they got too wise to believe it any longer. But who knows? Who knows for certain that they were wrong? Maybe in the end, the force that impels the stars is the human or alien will.
That's insane.
Is it?
Yes. And as a physicist, you should know better.
Yeah. And as a physicist, I know something else. Our new sun should have come over the horizon 45 minutes ago. So where is it?
So ends The Dancers by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by Wilton Hazard. Camden Singer was Rossiter and Hannah Wu was Bernard. I'm your host, Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
To 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Does anybody know where he's from?
From parts unknown!
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is, without question, the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it, Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers.
Call all hands. Speak to quarters.
One broadside into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Flintstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire!
Presenting Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's Indomitable Man of the Sea, Horatio Hornblower.
easy enough to look back and smile at this distance of time. But as I paced my quarterdeck in the burning sun on that morning long ago, I was far from smiling. So as not to imperil my mission, I'd been obliged to turn over the Natividad to the madman Don Julian, who called himself Divine, Almighty, El Supremo. Now he was coming aboard to murder my prisoners, the Spanish officers. I was determined to save them, at least.
Come here, you. Are you the Spanish sailing master?
Si, senor.
What is that image beside the taffrail there?
It's of the Virgin and Child, senor.
Throw it overboard. But wait, senor. I prefer to have the pleasure myself. So, now, which is the youngest of your mates?
I am, senor.
Very well. You will hold up your hand and declare your disbelief in any other divine lord than our gracious El Supremo. Up with your hand. Good. Now repeat after me. I swear.
No, senor. No, I cannot. I dare not.
No, then we shall not meet you, shall we? Lieutenant Barrios, Conterno, throw that overboard. No, the next man. You swear your disbelief?
There was no further trouble from the officers. They took the new oath one by one, as indeed they
must. Oh, you see, men.
Then de Crespo spoke to the crew. A mixed collection of Spaniards, Chinese, Negroes, Indians.
Sweeping Spaniards from the dominion of America. Within a year, the whole of the land from Mexico to Peru will be at his feet. There will be an end of Spanish misrule, of brutal domination, of slavery in mine and his. There will be land for everybody. Freedom and happiness under El Supremo. You can join us all. The alternative you have seen. Now, who is for El Supremo?
I am too.
Thank you, too, Captain. I think there is no more need for your prize crew now. Should any insubordination arise later, I shall be able to deal with it.
I'm quite sure you will. Mr. Gerard, you'll order your crew to withdraw and return to the Lydia. As my boat bore me back to my ship, I reflected bitterly on the murder of the Spanish master's mate. But there was nothing I could have done. At all costs, I must not fall out with Supremo or his followers while my orders remained uncompleted. As I reached my own deck, the boom of a gun from the Natividad was answered by one from the Lydia. A new flag was flying from the peak of the Natividad, blue with a yellow star in the middle.
Fire six! If I hadn't been born a ruddy fool, I shouldn't be here. Fire seven! I've left my wife and I left my home, everything that's dear. Fire eight!
Supremo came riding down to the beach with his ragged retinue, and I met him there. As we rowed out to the Lydia, I ran my eye over the ship to see that all was ready to receive our ally with full military formality. But before he mounted the ladder, he remarked,
"The correct salute for me, Capitan, is 23 guns."
Mr. Bush, pass the word to Mr. Marsh for 23 guns.
Don't look so stricken, Mr. Bush. It's two more than His Majesty himself receives. It's entirely meaningless.
Aye, sir. Dinner will be served shortly, El Supremo. Would you care to come below?
I will dine here, alone. Let the food be brought to me.
The misery and embarrassment of our makeshift dinner in the gunroom, into which we crowded with Supremo's retinue, was mercifully cut short by the arrival of the officer of the watch.
I beg your pardon, sir, but there's a messenger from the shore. I can't understand a word he says.
Very well, I'll come on deck. I think you'd better accompany me, Mr. Bush.
Thank you, sir.
Last load, thank heaven. Never seen such a dastardly murderous gang of cutthroats in my life. Soldiers, they call them. I'd give a week's back to know what the captain's up to. He don't stand what he's standing from this Supremo for nothing.
Well, here we are. Nail alongside. Come on, Ansem, up that ladder. Up the ladder, I say. We aren't sitting here all day.
Lord me, he's as awkward as a powder monkey.
Let's have his nuts, this old stand from under!
Ah! Yeah, fine time to go swimming, is it?
He can't swim! Ah, we'll have to fish him
now. Oh, all right. I'll go in for it.
Yeah, out the way there.
Well, here goes.
Hey, you conscious. Stop there wriggling, or else I'll let you go.
All right now. I got him. Come on, boy. Up you come. Right now, go on, up the ladder. Come on, I've come behind you to see you get up this time.
Well done, then. I'll see you get an extra top for that piece of work. Now get that man below and find him some dry clothes.
Capitan, oblige me by hanging those two men from the yardarm.
What?
I said, please hang that clumsy fool of a soldier.
But what?
I will not have fools in my army. And your seamen must be hanged for daring to save a man I would prefer to have been drowned.
With all due respect, Supremo, if I did what you wish, my men would no longer respect me. And it's essential for the success of our venture, yours and mine, that I should keep the loyalty and love of my crew.
Love? Captain, I will show you loyalty. Where is that scum who fell into the sea?
Supremo, I am here.
I shall be merciful because it pleases me to be so. I was going to hang you, but instead I give you permission to drown.
Thank you, Supremo. Thank you.
Blimey, he's got to jump overboard.
So. And now, Capitan, you will of course hang your man.
I bow to your wish, Supremo, but may I not have the honor of following the lesson you have so kindly taught me?
I do not understand you, Captain.
Allow me to demonstrate. Harvey, come here.
I'm here, sir.
You have displeased El Supremo, Harvey, which means death. I give you permission to go.
Permission to... thank you kindly, sir.
The vanity of Supremo was so colossal that it apparently never occurred to him that Harvey was probably the finest diver and swimmer in the British Navy. Landed my mad and cutthroat ally, El Supremo, at the port of La Libertad, and he disappeared with his murderous army in the direction of El Salvador. For the space, I was free of him and all his works, and no longer under the necessity of pretending to pay him homage. The sky was blue, the sea was blue and silver, and in my pleasure, I so far forgot myself as actually to converse with Lieutenant Bush.
It's pleasant to be at sea again, Mr. Bush, with our ship to ourselves.
It's better than a tonic, sir. Harvey's glad to return to work, too, sir. He didn't like hiding in the cable tier after we picked him up. It mightn't be a bad thing, sir, if that fellow Supremo happened to get killed in the fighting.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Bush.
Hey, no!
Hey, oh.
Where are we? On the port bow, sir! A two-masted lugger, sir! She's right to windward, running down to us under all sail, sir!
She don't like the look of our gun, sir. She's hove to, just out of range. Hey, she's setting about, sir.
The dinghy danced jerkily across the water, and presently a man came scrambling up the ladder. So many strange figures had mounted that ladder of late. This new arrival wore the full dress of the Spanish Royal Navy, and his epaulettes gleamed in the sun. He came forward and bowed.
Captain Hornblower.
I am Captain Hornblower.
Captain Manuel Diaz at your service. I have to welcome you as the new ally of Spain.
Ally of Spain? Is this a jest, sir?
Sure, it is no jest, Captain. I've been seeking you for the past 4 days. Let me explain.
Please.
Last month, Napoleon Bonaparte stole our King Ferdinand from us and has named his brother Joseph King of Spain. In consequence, the Spanish government has signed a treaty of perpetual alliance and friendship with His Majesty of England. Lest you doubt me, sir, I have here some letters. One from your admiral in the Leeward Islands, sent overland from Portobello, one from His Excellency the Viceroy of Peru, and one from the English lady in Panama.
Oh, thank you. And be good enough to pardon me while I retire to study these documents.
Sir, sir.
Mr. Bush, you will entertain Captain Diaz until my return.
Aye, aye, sir.
Senor Diaz, everything appears to be in order.
Senor?
Greetings to our new allies. I am proud to be serving with Spain against the Corsican tyrant.
Thank you, Captain. We were very much afraid lest you should fall in with the Natividad before you heard the news, because she has not heard it either. In that case, I'm afraid your fine frigate would have come to serious harm.
Bring the prisoners up from the cable tier, quickly.
Aye, aye, sir.
I regret to have to tell you, senor, that by evil chance, the Natividad met us a week ago.
You met the Natividad?
I plunged feverishly into an explanation, but it was not easy to tell a Spanish captain that I'd captured a ship twice my power without receiving one shot, nor to explain that the ship was now under the flag of El Supremo. Then, a fresh and harassing aspect of the situation struck him.
Something must be done. The Manilla Galleon is at sea. She's due to arrive at Acapulco next month with priceless treasure. The Natividad will intercept her and... Oh, her loss might well bankrupt our government.
Very well, sir. My duty is plain. I will take my ship back to fight the Natividad.
Thank you, Captain. You will call at Panama first to consult the Viceroy?
Yes.
Then I will bid you goodbye for the time being. If I reach Panama first, I will arrange your welcome.
Thank you, sir.
You see, Mr. Bush, the situation is complicated.
It's not your fault, sir. After all, you have only obeyed your Admiralty orders.
The Lords of the Admiralty will not allow such a small point to influence their opinion of a captain and his officers, who are the cause of such trouble, Mr. Bush.
I feel you're right, sir.
However, there's another and more pressing matter. Lady Barbara Wellesley is at Panama and desires a passage in the Lydia to Europe.
Sir, how could we carry such a lady in the Lydia? A frigate is hardly equipped for comfort.
That is what I shall have to point out to the lady. Though if she has the normal Wellesley blood in her, I suspect I shall be wasting my time. I was soon to have an opportunity of finding out at first hand. We sailed into the roadstead of Panama the next morning.
There's a lady about, sir. An English lady, I think. Wants to go aboard, sir.
She seems disinclined to wait for permission, it seems. We shall take no action, Mr. Bush. One of those masculine women. No real woman would catch and climb a rope ladder like that. Besides, what's an English woman doing in Panama without a male escort?
Mr. Midshipman, please be so good as to have my luggage brought up out of the boat.
There's the captain, madam.
Yes, so I see. But please have my luggage brought up while I speak to him.
I faced an internal struggle. I disliked the aristocracy. I could not forget that as a doctor's son, I had had to touch my hat to the local squire. Yet it would be foolish for a poverty-stricken frigate captain with no influence to offend a member of such a family as the Wellesleys. For the present, I decided on icy formality.
Are you the captain of this ship, sir?
Captain Hornblower, at your service, ma'am.
Well, I am Lady Barbara Wellesley. I wrote you a note requesting a passage to England. I trust you received it?
I did, ma'am, but I do not think it wise for your ladyship to join this vessel.
Please tell me why, sir.
Because, ma'am, we shall shortly be in action with the enemy. Also, we shall have to return to England via Cape Horn. Your ladyship would be well advised to make your way to Portobello. From there, you could reach Jamaica and obtain a berth in a West India packet which is accustomed to female passengers.
I have informed you, sir, that there is yellow fever in Portobello.
Yes, ma'am, but...
1,000 persons died of it last week. That is why I removed to Panama.
May I ask why your ladyship was in Portobello?
Because, sir, the West Indian packet in which I was a female passenger was captured by a Spanish privateer and brought there.
I see.
I regret, sir, that I cannot tell you the name of my grandmother's cook, but I shall be glad to answer any further questions which a gentleman of breeding would ask.
Yes, but we are going out to fight a ship of twice our force. It will be dangerous.
I would rather be on your ship, whomever you have to fight, than to be in Panama with a yellow fever.
Mm-hmm. Well, what of Cape Horn, ma'am?
Well, I have no knowledge of it. But I've twice rounded the Cape of Good Hope during my brother's governor generalship, and I have never yet been seasick. Well, soon, Captain, I will come to think that I shall be unwelcome aboard. I can hardly imagine that a gentleman holding the King's commission would be discourteous to a woman, especially to a woman with my name.
I was only doing my duty, ma'am, in pointing out the dangers to which you will be exposed. For myself, nothing would give me greater pleasure than your presence.
Supremo, and now to Lady Barbara. If I offended this lady, I might, well, never command a ship again. My wife and I might rot on half pay for the rest of our lives. I was 37 and not more than 1/8 of the way up the captain's list. The goodwill at the Wellesleys might enable me to reach flag rank.
Begging your pardon, ma'am, but your luggage is aboard.
Oh, thank you. Be so kind as to give this to the boat.
But, ma'am, there will be no room in your cabin for a tenth of that luggage.
I am aware of that, sir. I have dwelt in a cabin before. That sea chest will hold all I require. The rest can be put where you will. And now, may I see my cabin?
Well, you see, your ladyship, a frigate has few of the luxuries of an Indiaman.
I was just thinking that it was scandalous that a king's officer should be given such quarters.
And as I left to pay my call on the Viceroy...
Where shall I serve her ladyship's dinner,
sir? I don't know, Bush.
Ask her, blast you.
Horatio Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater, check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Humanity's last hope to find and settle a new world. A small terraforming fleet sets out to prepare a lifeless planet for the colony ships sure to follow in their wake.
Civilized.
Here's the stuff you wanted.
Thank you so much. Okay, I just gotta get the basket and have the blanket.
Listen, Beatrix, I appreciate that you want to help us bond as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great for morale. I'm just really not very comfortable out here.
Oh, Barty, I know, but Bartholomew, I apologize. But it's important. We have to bond. We have to build relationships together in order to have a trust level that really helps us, you know, bond. It's a full circle thing. I've explained it in all of the paperwork that I sent you.
Yes, no, I appreciate that. It's just I've stepped in something back there. I'm really more comfortable documenting the bonding than participating myself.
Well, I just thought it was important that we all take a moment. We've been working so hard, and Bob hasn't, but we've been working, and we've been, you know, really building a foundation together here. And
I brought you all that stuff.
Bob, I don't want to minimize what you've done.
Yeah.
But 3 mushrooms and a half-eaten apple is food. So
thank you. Thank you.
It is food. But I did go inside the ship and ask Captain here for some rations, so.
Well, okay. I'm sensing a bit of friction here. I think we can resolve it. So, listen, Beatrix, your work has been very much appreciated up until now.
Up until now.
And will continue to be appreciated far into the future, I don't doubt.
Mm.
And this morale building is great. Bob, if you would like an opportunity to step up, well, I mean, you are our assistant supervisor of marketing support services, uh-huh. housing, food.
And ancillary services.
And ancillary services,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So perhaps on this, what was it you called it, Beatrix? A
picnic.
Picnic. You could take the rations and help jazz them up a bit, you know, prepare a nice, nice something.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. But, okay. Yeah,
so we're gonna
great.
Do that right here, right?
Like, No. We're gonna go into the wilderness.
No. We're already like, I don't know how far is that from the ship? We're at least like 20 paces from the ship.
I don't want to go any more wilderness than this.
Like, wait. What if the captain can't reach us on our doohickeys?
Well, that's why we have her with our constant ear, right, Captain?
Yeah, I'm here.
She's here.
You got this. You guys, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be fun.
Come on. I know a great spot is just atop a little hill, and we can see just under the tree line.
Yeah, guys, get out. Live a little.
Yeah, I think we're living. I feel like I'm living right now. Look, we are a long way. Like, if something were to happen, we might not even make it to ship.
Neither of you have explored beyond this 20 paces. I've actually put a ring in the ground, and you have never gone more than 30 feet away from the ship.
That's what that ring is. Oh.
No, I just took a stick and drew a circle in the ground.
I was afraid for a while that it was like we were being targeted, or, you know, like it was a creature.
No,
it had like a long tail with a spike on it.
Just me with a stick.
Oh.
Well...
Okay, here's it. I'm just going to take this piece of paper and throw it back at the ship, and I'm going to make you both come. We're not working today, except maybe Bob, because he has to prepare the food. And what? That's all we're doing. We're just going, we're walking, we're taking an adventure. We're going to go on an adventure, because that's what scouts do, and that's what people do when they want to build camaraderie, and that's what we're doing today.
Yeah, you tell them, Beatrix.
Thanks, Captain.
All right, Beatrix. This hill lookout that you want us to attend.
Yes.
Can you tell me where precisely on this map it's located?
Oh, sure. Just give me the map for a second. Crumble, 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 throw!
I like your gumption, Beatrix.
Thanks, Bob.
Sort of infectious. You know what? I'm going to take these mushrooms and squish them up in the
ground! Oh, Bob, that was our... That was the three... That was what...
Now
we just have this half-eaten apple.
I'm going to take up these bad feelings that we're experiencing on our team and crumple, 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 throw!
Yeah, Barty!
That's the spirit.
Bartholomew! I thought maybe today we could try the Barty, but it's fine.
You know, we could take our clothes.
No, Bob, is the bonding levels.
Okay.
Level 9. We're at level 2, maybe? Okay.
There's a whole other form to
Barty,
do that.
All right, you know what? I'm going to step over this line.
Do it.
The line that
Meet me on the other side.
With the long tail and the spike.
Me with a stick.
Maybe Beatrix with a stick. I'm going to do it.
Only if you're comfortable.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it, Barty. Captain, if you never hear from me again, know that I took this step for...
Us.
Oh!
What? Oh, you said, oh! What? I'm running back! I'm going to the ship! I'm running back! What is it? What'd you see, Captain?
I didn't see anything. I was just saying, oh, because I was proud of you.
Oh.
Jeez.
Hi, Beatrix.
I've already spent 45 minutes bringing you both back. It feels like another circle where I have to convince you to come to the line, and then Bob goes over the line, and then Bob runs back to the ship. This is the fourth time this has happened. I am trying so hard to remain cheerful and optimistic that we will get beyond here. But this is, like I said, the fourth time Bob has run back to the ship. All we have is a half-eaten apple and some rations, and I just wanted to go...
And a crumpled-up piece of paper!
I just want to go on a picnic. That's all I want. I just want to go on a picnic. I just want to do bond together and enjoy each other's company and eat some gel bars.
In the interest of compromise, perhaps a picnic within sight of the ship.
No! Compromising is part of your HR function, and we are breaking function today. We are going to... if you guys won't come, I'm going by myself. Captain, let's go.
Beatrix, can you slow down a little? It's getting pretty cold. I know we're not lost. I get it, but it's getting dark and cold, and I can barely see you.
No, it's fine. I'm scouting.
But where, Barty?
Bartholomew!
Keep coming. I think Beatrix found the trail.
Oh, this is it! This is it! We're just a few paces away!
Uh-huh. I'm sure we are, Beatrix.
Would be nice if somebody had that map.
I didn't think I needed it. Maybe we could just...
I don't think you need it, Beatrix. I believe in you.
Thanks, Bob.
It's either that or believe that we're going to die a horrible death.
I believe in you, too, but at this point, from a distance, I'm sorry, Beatrix. I wanted to support the idea, and I do for you.
Well, sucks to you both, because this is the spot. I found it. Here we go. Blanket laid, picnic basket down, and we're just going to sit here, and we're going to enjoy each other's company, because this is where it's supposed to be.
Beatrix?
Mm.
We've had three picnics now, and we really want to get back to the ship.
When does the picnic adventure end?
Picnic adventure never ends. Not until we trust each other.
Nah, never mind. Sorry.
What?
I'm just seeing things because I'm like delirious.
No, it's Bob, feel free to express yourself.
Was that tree so close to Beatrix a few minutes ago?
What are you talking about?
I understand the confusion here. This is not a tree.
What?
I was doing some reading about this in the Boxberry room. This is a creature.
Huh?
A creature.
Beatrix?
Should I move?
No.
Should I just stay in?
Just stay right there. Okay. Don't make any sudden moves. So that large, dark area with the shiny bits, would that be what we would refer to as a mouth?
The truth is, I was actually looking up a cactus. So I just, you know, sort of flipped by creature on the way. I didn't read in detail. I just saw the picture.
So shouldn't you guys be running by now?
I really don't know. It may or may not be a threat.
What if I'm just going to stand here?
Yeah, and that way we can find out if it's a threat. That's an excellent idea, Beatrix.
That's totally what my impetus was.
Captain? Mm-hmm. It would be helpful if we knew which way to run. Should we start running? Because it's sort of dark and we're not lost. I'm not going to say we're lost.
Not lost. We're not lost.
We're not lost. We're not lost, Captain. Maybe we don't know where we are.
Wait a minute. We have a little system on our communicators that tells us where the ship is in proximity to us with a compass.
There you go.
I shouldn't have talked so loud.
There's just something I want to quickly revisit. This may or may not be the time, but just very quickly.
Marty?
Bartholomew? Bob, one of your ancillary functions is making sure that we have flashlights available.
Yep, right now my ancillary function is that the creature is getting really close to Beatrix.
Surprisingly, that is not one of your ancillary functions.
Oh, I felt it drool on my shoulder.
Okay, Beatrix, just stay there.
I don't know what to do.
We got you. We're going to get you out of this, Beatrix.
Well, first of all, I think it's important that we know we are not lost and that this was a successful picnic.
It's Bartholomew!
Oh, thank God I was able to run back and get that thing off her wrist. Did you know it leads you right back to the ship? Bartholomew, I should find mine and wear it.
It is part of the prescribed uniform.
Why don't you wear it?
I have other things to occupy my wrist.
Oh, that was so horrible. It was so awful. Captain, we've lost Beatrix. Oh, Captain, yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What do you want?
It ate her.
She'll be fine.
She'll literally be fine.
No, you don't understand. It ate her. It was just goopy red mess.
Did you have a nice time at the picnic, though?
Yeah,
it was a great picnic, right?
Yeah, the second picnic was really nice, actually. Yeah. You know, when we had the apple to eat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, morning, everyone.
What?
Why are you all so dirty and covered in muck? Well, whatever. I had a great idea. I think today we should go on a picnic.
Civilized. Starring Christy Bolton, Michael Davinsky, Mbula Enobong, and Sean Howard. Sound design and music by Eli McElveen. Cover art by David Desmarais. Join us on Patreon for bonus episodes and lots more. Look for the support us link at civilizedpod.com.
A Fable and Folly production.
Montreal's electropop duo Milk and Bone play the Fox Cabaret on August 30th. Tickets are on sale now at eventbrite.com and Red Cat Records. Presented by MRG Concerts, CITR Radio, and Discorder Magazine.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. That'll be all that we have